And of course, he didn't know whether he would be able to continue as a composer. So a lot of this is in this piece. And there's so much detail in the piece. It's like super Haydn, but over the top, totally over the top. And anger. And I think Beethoven is the first one who can write anger like nobody else.
Tonight's conductor, David Zinman. Well, when Beethoven played the work on the piano to Ferdinand Ries, he was overwhelmed. I believe that heaven and earth must tremble beneath when it is performed. Berlioz described the second movement, Funeral March, as funeral games around the grave of the warrior, such as those in the Iliad. David Zinman conducts the Zurich Tonhalle Orchestra in Beethoven's Eroica Symphony. Thank you.
Thank you.
David Zinman conducting the Zurich Tonhalle Orchestra here at the BBC Proms. Beethoven's Symphony No. 3 in E-flat major. His heroic symphony, composed to celebrate the memory of a great man. David Zinman returns to the platform, the New York-born conductor who studied with Pierre Monteur, made his debut conducting the Philadelphia Orchestra back in 1967. Now in his mid-70s, this his 16th season as music director of the Tonhalle Orchestra. He's recently signed a new contract with them, which will keep him there through until 2015, pretty much to his 80th birthday. Though, as he told me the other day on In Tune, whether he will retire or not at that point, it's a matter still to be decided. Vast amounts of energy and enthusiasm the orchestra gave this concert in Zurich at the Tonhalle two nights ago. And with a change of symphony, Dvorak rather than Beethoven, they take it now to the Edinburgh International Festival. I think we could say elegant restraint, the mantra of tonight's concert. Both soloist and conductor and orchestra indeed, acting as a perfect conduit to present purely the intentions of first Mozart and then Beethoven. David Zinman back again, arms wide open, as he brings the orchestra to its feet. Julia Becker, our concertmaster this evening. The Rotterdam Philharmonic, Rochester Philharmonic in the States, and the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra amongst the orchestras that Zinman has been music director of. Has a discography of over 100 recordings, Mahler symphonies with the Zurich Tonhalle Orchestra, his latest release. Recording of the Brahms symphonies will be released in the autumn, and he's currently recording the Schubert symphonies. Well, the audience have got rhythm tonight, that's for sure, as David Zinman returns once again. The orchestra stand again. We're going to have an encore.
The same, but different.
That was the finale from Beethoven's Creatures of Prometheus. The same but different, said David Zinman. A starting point for his Eroica Symphony. He took the final theme from Prometheus, a rich theme that he'd already used as the basis for the ballroom dance and created a set of variations for piano around it. So too was it to inspire his Eroica Symphony. David Zinman conducting the Tanhalle Orchestra Zurich here at the BBC Proms. If you joined us late and missed Maria João Pires playing Mozart's K595 Piano Concerto, or indeed the rather beautiful Cold Heat by Anders Hillborg, which opened our programme tonight, you can hear them again when this prom is repeated on Monday afternoon at 2 o'clock on BBC Radio 3. And if you can't wait that long, a bit later on this evening, it'll be available to listen to on the BBC iPlayer. Well, with that, we reach the end of tonight's prom. Tomorrow here at the Royal Albert Hall, Mendelssohn's Elijah, sung by choirs from Berkshire, Northern Ireland, Manchester and Wroclaw in Poland. Paul McCreesh conducts the Gabrielli Consort, and a stellar lineup of British soloists, Rosemary Joshua, Sarah Connolly, Robert Murray and Simon Keenly side. That's tomorrow night at 7. For now, though, from the Royal Albert Hall, Very good night to you. And back to Jonathan Swain at Broadcasting House.
Petrock, thank you. Petrock Trelawney there. And keeping Beethoven very much in sight, there's a performance of his Fifth Symphony in Through the Night tonight in the concert starting at 1 o'clock. Myung Hun Chung conducting the French Radio Philharmonic. And back at the proms, there's this.
It could just be the most provocative symphonic statement ever made. Beethoven's Ninth Symphony gets its annual performance at the BBC Proms. Join us for one of the highlights of each and every prom season, Wednesday night at 7:30 on BBC Radio 3.
We're back to this evening in a little under 10 minutes tonight. Between the Years, the home of innovative feature-making on Radio 3, Kerry Shale performs The Man with the Blue Guitar by Wallace Stevens, with reflections on the poem and the Picasso painting that inspired it from David Hockney, among others. As Petrock mentioned just now, you can hear Mendelssohn's magnificent oratorio Elijah in tomorrow night's prom, something on a smaller scale from him now, one of his songs. It's Faith in Spring, Frühlingsglaube. The singer is Margaret Price and the pianist Graham Johnson. Mendelssohn's song Frühlingsglaube, Faith in Spring, sung there by Dame Margaret Price with the pianist Graham Johnson. We'll follow it music by the Frenchman Albert Roussel, born a little after Debussy and just before Ravel, and perhaps not quite as distinctive as either, but once you're inside his world, it's quite addictive, the individual twists of harmony and the superb craftsmanship. The music is Roussel's Divertissement for piano and wind quintet. And this recording made in 1989 with a group of France's finest wind players and the pianist Pascal Roger. Thank you. Music from 1906 by Roussel, his Divertissement, Opus 6, with flautist Catherine Quentin, oboist Maurice Bourg, clarinetist Michel Portal, bassoonist Amaury Vallée, horn player André Cazalet, and pianist Pascal Roger. Aside to Roussel there, we don't often hear less astringent, rather gentler than usual. You're listening to BBC Radio 3. It's just gone 10 o'clock and now Between the Ears, the home of innovative feature-making on Radio 3, Kerry Shale performs The Man with the Blue Guitar by Wallace Stevens, with reflections on the poem and the Picasso painting that inspired it from David Hockney, the poets Sue Hubbard and Dana Joyer, and with new music for blue guitar composed and played by Martin Simpson.
The Man with the Blue Guitar by Wallace Stevens. The man bent over his guitar, a shearsman of sorts. The day was green. They said, "You have a blue guitar. You do not play things as they are." The man replied, "Things as they are changed upon the blue guitar." And they said then, "But play you must, a tune beyond us, yet ourselves. A tune upon the blue guitar of things exactly as they are."
I'm David Hockney, a painter, artist. I read it when I was staying in the Pines on Fire Island, about 1976, and I thought it was terrific. I read it first to myself, and then I read it out aloud to myself, which is very good because you then get the rhythms that are in it, especially the guitar rhythms and things. And I thought it was terrific. You realise what it's about the imagination transforming things. But obviously the guitar was the imagination. He'd been inspired by Picasso.
I cannot bring a world quite round, although I patch it as I can. I sing a hero's head, large eye, and bearded bronze, but not a man. Although I patch him as I can and reach through him almost to man, if to serenade almost to man is to miss by that things as they are, say that it is the serenade of a man that plays a blue guitar.
I'm Sue Hubbard, and I'm a poet and a novelist, and I write about art. Picasso's painting, The Old Guitarist from the Blue Period, is the springboard for Wallace Stevens, The Man with the Blue Guitar. It's a strange and rather melancholy painting. By definition, it's blue. But the man is sitting perhaps on a street corner. He's dejected. He's got torn rags of clothes. And he's clutching a guitar. And the sense of the painting is really one of the outsider, and that the only thing he has in the world is this guitar. It's almost as though he's clutching his soul. And I think what Picasso is talking about in this painting is the solitary bohemian existence of the artist and the struggle of the artistic life.
Ah, but to play man number one, to drive the dagger in his heart, to lay his brain upon the board and pick the acrid colors out, to nail his thought across the door, its wings spread wide to rain and snow, to strike his living high and ho, to tick it, talk it, turn it true, to bang it from a savage blue, jangling the metal of the strings.
I was very turned on by it, so I actually, later that year, I just started some little etchings. I mean, I only did perhaps a couple, just playing with the ideas in it. And then I realized I could do a few, actually, for it. I think I finished up making about 20. You have Picasso's imagery to play with. I mean, for me at that time, it was a very exciting thing. It seemed rich material for me.
So, that's life then. Things as they are. It picks its way on the blue guitar. A million people on one string, and all their manner in the thing, and all their manner right and wrong, and all their manner weak and strong. And that's life then. Things as they are. This buzzing of the blue guitar.
Well, that was a challenge. I thought, how would you do a buzzing of a blue guitar? It's a good subject. It's utterly non-visual, really. So how do you do it visually? And I suggested the sound by these kind of waving curtains that the sound would make and move it and things. It's just a suggestion, but the idea of drawing a sound would appeal to me.
Do not speak to us of the greatness of poetry, of the torches wisping in the underground, of the structure of vaults upon a point of light. There are no shadows in our sun. Day is desire, and night is sleep. There are no shadows anywhere. The earth, for us, is flat and bare. There are no shadows. Poetry, exceeding music, must take the place of empty heaven and its hymns. Ourselves in poetry must take their place, even in the chattering of your guitar.
I'm Dana Gioia. I'm a poet and a critic. And the basic argument of the poem is really quite simple. How do we make sense in a world in which we no longer have religious myths that give order to life and the universe? And what Stevens says is that poetry becomes a substitute for religion. And by poetry, what Stevens means is the imagination, where he says poetry exceeding music must take the place of empty heaven and its hymns. Now, this is not, dare I say, a small ambition. And so Stevens, you know, is sort of setting up a new myth by which to live. And he has a very simple explanation. He says that we have reality, which is, in his mind, pretty much the natural world. We have the imagination, which is our ability to take reality and make it subjective, and that the imagination working with reality has to create a fiction, a myth, a poem, as it were, that replaces religion, which we no longer can accept. And Picasso becomes one of the models by which the imagination creates a new view of reality. So you can say that what this really is a philosophical, even a theological poem, which uses art, poetry, the imagination as the basis for a new world order.
Attune beyond us as we are, yet nothing changed by the blue guitar. Ourselves in the tune as if in space, yet nothing changed except the place of things as they are, and only the place as you play them on the blue guitar, placed so, beyond the compass of change, perceived in a final atmosphere. for a moment final, in the way the thinking of art seems final when the thinking of God is smoky dew. The tune is space. The blue guitar becomes the place of things as they are, a composing of senses of the guitar.
I think one reason that Picasso's The Old Guitarist haunted Stevens, above and beyond the sheer genius of that painting, was that Stevens himself played the guitar. He was, by all reports, a rather bad guitarist. But the notion of sort of bending over a guitar and picking notes and using it as a kind of meditation was something that he knew personally.
The vivid, florid, turgid sky, the drenching thunder rolling by, the morning deluged still by night, the clouds tumultuously bright, and the feeling heavy in cold chords, struggling toward impassioned choirs, crying among the clouds, enraged by gold antagonists in air. I know my lazy, leaden twang is like the reason in a storm, and yet it brings the storm to bear. I twang it out and leave it there. And the color, the overcast blue of the air, in which the blue guitar is a form, described but difficult. And I am merely a shadow, hunched above the arrowy, still string, the maker of a thing yet to be made, the color like a thought that grows out of a mood, the tragic robe of the actor, half his gesture, half his speech, the dress of his meaning, silk sodden with his melancholy words, the weather of his stage, himself.
When you read a long poem like that, first of all, you don't get it all immediately. It's like a piece of complicated music. You don't hear it all. So I'd find things, little images, play with the idea of colors, using the colors you're using, things like that.
A painting is by definition silent. And words are, by necessity, conceptual rather than pictorial. And so what Stevens is trying to do is to say, how does one create the effect of a painting in a poem? Stevens is using colors deliberately. I don't know how many times the word blue appears in this long poem, but it's constantly there as a kind of motif. But he creates these series of colors. Green represents the sun, interestingly enough. It's creativity. Red is some kind of vanished belief system. He's got gold, which represents these no longer existent gods. He has bronze for the kind of heroes that mankind has made. And he's using these colors very deliberately in a very painterly way.
Tom, Tom, c'est moi. The blue guitar and I are one. The orchestra fills the high hall with shuffling men, high as the hall. The whirling noise of a multitude dwindles. All said to his breath that lies awake at night. I know that timid breathing. Where do I begin and end? And where, as I strum the thing, do I pick up that which momentously declares itself not to be I, and yet must be? It could be nothing else.
Well, you might say that art in the past played things as they are, showed the world to us as we thought, at least, it was. What, of course, Picasso does and goes on later to do in Cubism is to show that reality is an abstraction with many perspective possibilities. And I think it is actually this patchworking that Wallace Stevens particularly takes up. The guitar here doesn't express reality. The imagination isn't reality, but they do share qualities. A tune beyond us, yet ourselves, and things exactly as they are. So it is both part of us and not part of us. It can only be a creative act. It can't be the thing itself.
First one beam, then another, then a thousand are radiant in the sky. Each is both star and orb, and day is the riches of their atmosphere. The sea appends its tattery hues. The shores are banks of muffling mist. One says a German chandelier. A candle is enough to light the world. It makes it clear. Even at noon, it glistens in essential dark. At night, it lights the fruit and wine, the book and bread, things as they are, in a chiaroscuro, where one sits and plays the blue guitar.
Stevens thought of Picasso as the emblematic modern artist. And at one point, midway through the poem, he quotes Picasso, just this phrase of Picasso that Stevens actually saw in a French magazine, Cahiers d'Art, on an issue that they had done on surrealism. So it's Picasso talking about something decades later than this 1903 painting. And Picasso says that un somme de destruction, the sum or an accumulation of destruction, which Stevens translates slightly more flamboyantly as this horde of destruction. You know, it's almost as if it's a kind of military aftermath which has left destruction in its wake. It's a very colorful translation, which is basically a symbol of society. And he takes this one later quote of Picasso, and it becomes a kind of symbol for, you know, one of the major ideas in the poem, which is that what we're left with in the modern era is no longer a belief system that works, no longer a civilization that works. What we're left with is a kind of junk heap, a bunch of ruins of a society which is no longer functioning.
Is this picture of Picasso's, this horde of destructions, a picture of ourselves now, an image of our society? Do I sit deformed, a naked egg, catching at goodbye, harvest moon, without seeing the harvest or the moon? Things as they are have been destroyed. Have I? Am I a man that is dead, at a table on which the food is cold? Is my thought a memory, not alive? Is the spot on the floor there, wine or blood, and whichever it may be, is it mine? A dream. To call it a dream in which I can believe, in face of the object, a dream no longer a dream, a thing, of things as they are, as the blue guitar, after long strumming on certain nights, gives the touch of the senses, not of the hand, but the very senses as they touch the wind gloss. Or as daylight comes, like light in a mirroring of cliffs, rising upward from a sea of X.
We made a little book. I mean, I've forgotten how many we printed. It was done in 1977. It was called The Blue Guitar, Etchings by David Hockney, who was inspired by Wallace Stevens, who was inspired by Pablo Picasso. So it worked, and we probably did maybe 2,000 copies of this book.
What is there in life except one's ideas? Good air, good friend. What is there in life? Is it ideas that I believe? Good air, my only friend. Believe, believe would be a brother full of love. Believe would be a friend, friendlier than my only friend, good air. Poor pale guitar. Poetry is the subject of the poem. From this poem issues, and to this returns. Between the two, between issue and return, there is an absence in reality. Things as they are, or so we say. But are these separate? Is it an absence for the poem, which acquires its true appearances there? Sun's green, clouds red, earth feeling, sky that thinks. From these it takes, perhaps it gives, in the universal intercourse.
Of course, we have to remember that this poem was published in the 30s, and there was a huge uncertainty in American culture, I suppose, between the certainties of religion and atheism and agnosticism. And this poem explores all that. That is why I suppose one could say that the actual subject of the poem is poetry itself, that the only meaning that can be achieved is the process of making art. And this is, I think, one of the things that Wallace Stevens actually took from Picasso, that you have all these shards and all you can do is put them back together again in some form which will give you the poet or the artist's version of reality. There is nothing beyond it. Though, of course, Stevens, in a sense, because he was a deeply philosophical poet, I think is always searching for an existential meaning. So there's that dichotomy, there's that tension in the poem, things being what they are, but never being able to be what they are.
A poem like a missile found in the mud, a missile for that young man, that scholar hungriest for that book, the very book, or less, a page, or, at the least, a phrase, that phrase, a hawk of life, that Latined phrase. To know, a missile for brooding sight, to meet that hawk's eye and to flinch not at the eye, but at the joy of it. I play, but this is what I think.
Stevens is a very odd poet because he is essentially a philosophical poet, but he is almost incapable of creating a linear structure. And so his structure is musical. Stevens tends to circle around the idea again and again, almost like a theme in variations. And so I think one of the interesting things about The Man with the Blue Guitar is that he is creating a musical set of variations on, as it were, the imaginary unheard tune that's being played by Picasso's musician.
How long late the pheasant sleeps. The employer and the employee contend, combat, compose their droll affair. The bubbling sun will bubble up, spring sparkle, and the cockbird shriek. The employer and employee will hear and continue their affair. The shriek will rack the thickets. There is no place here for the lark fixed in the mind in the museum of the sky. The cock will claw sleep. Morning is not sun. It is this posture of the nerves, as if a blunted player clutched the nuances of the blue guitar. It must be this rhapsody or none, the rhapsody of things as they are.
The poem has 33 sections. The poem is an homage to Dante. You know, each of the sections of Dante's comedy have 33 sections, and there's finally a 34th that make it 100. Dante describes the meaning of life by showing how life relates to this vast theological geography of the afterlife. Stevens is saying we have no afterlife, but he creates a parallel structure as a way of saying, I mean business. This is a serious poem. This is the poem that gives you my worldview.
Throw away the lights, the definitions, and say of what you see in the dark, that it is this or that it is that, but do not use the rotted names. How should you walk in that space and know nothing of the madness of space, nothing of its jocular procreations? Throw the lights away. Nothing must stand between you and the shapes you take when the crust of shape has been destroyed. You, as you are yourself. The blue guitar surprises you.
Things as they are changed upon the blue guitar. It's wonderful. I mean, it's true. Imagination changes things. I mean, isn't failure of imagination a tragedy, our tragedy, really? I mean, I always think so. Most failures are from failure of imagination, in a way. It's a powerful piece, I think, a very powerful poem. It is. It is deep. Yes, it is. Things as they are changed upon the blue guitar. It's a very good line, isn't it?
That generation's dream, aviled in the mud, in Monday's dirty light. That's it. The only dream they knew. Time in its final block. Not time to come. A wrangling of two dreams. Here is the bread of time to come. Here is its actual stone. The bread will be our bread. The stone will be our bed. And we shall sleep by night. We shall forget by day, except the moments when we chose to play the imagined pine, the imagined jay.
The Man with the Blue Guitar was performed by Kerry Shale, with music composed and played by Martin Simpson. You also heard the painter David Hockney and the poets Sue Hubbard and Dana Joya. Between the Ears was produced by Julian May.
In the BBC Radio 3 lunchtime concert, Magdalena Kozina, Simon Keenly-Side, the Belcher Quartet, Marta Argerich and Nelson Gurner. And that's just the first of 3 weeks of coverage of the best chamber concerts at the 2011 Edinburgh International Festival. Every year in Scotland's capital city, we have the opportunity to hear the finest chamber music the world has to offer. So whether it's the grandeur of the Usher Hall or the intimacy of the Queen's Hall, take the best seat in the house by joining me, Jamie McDougall, and my colleague Mary-Ann Kennedy for 3 weeks in Edinburgh in the Radio 3 Lunchtime Concert, Tuesdays to Fridays from 1 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3.
Back to this evening, it's 29 minutes to 11 and time now for Here and Now with Ivan Hewitt.
Hello and welcome to Here and Now and the second of two Antipodean-themed programmes. The City of London Festival focused this year on music from Australia and New Zealand, and tonight we'll be featuring a festival concert given by Australia's foremost new music group, the Elysian Ensemble. The group's director is Daryl Buckley and he'll be joining me in the studio a little later. But let's set the ball rolling with the first piece. It's by Michael Finnessy, who isn't Australian at all. In fact, he's about as English as they come. But like several English composers who've spent time in Australia, he's been hugely inspired by the strangeness and the sheer size of the Australian landscape, and by the ancient mythologies of the Aboriginal people who lived there. Several pieces came out of that experience, and we're going to hear one of them now. It's called Ajal, which is the ancient Aboriginal name for sky. Here it is now, played by the Elysian Ensemble.